Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Hagman and Hagman Report. I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us. Thank you for so much for your belief and trust in us. You know, the independent media, to me, is the most important. We really need the independent media, and we need to be above reproach, and we need to be right on the money. We need to be good. We really do. And one of the individuals I have got a lot of respect for is someone who's been around a lot, and he has a website, obviously, nomorefakenews.com. He's the author of a number, shall I say, books. I mean, he's an investigative reporter, John Rappaport. He's worked as a freelance investigative reporter for the last three decades. He is a man, again, I've followed his work. I've been a fan of his work. Go to nomorefakenews.com. He's appeared everywhere. If you don't know who he is, then you've been living under a rock for the last, I don't know, for the last decade and a half or more than that. He's got a good presence across social networking. And again, nomorefakenews.com. It's the real news. And I've just been waiting all week. Really, this is like the highlight of my week to actually get to speak with John Rappaport. So with that, John, Mr. Rappaport, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Well, I'll tell you what, you've got my admiration for the decades of work that you've done in combating, the fake news long before it was ever fake news or labeled as such. And you're an intrepid investigative reporter, and I thank you for that. And I really appreciate, again, all you've done and all your hard work in exposing the misdeeds of people. Having said that, your website, No More Fake News, you've got some books. If you want to just offer the individuals who are part of our audience or who are our audience that maybe don't know 100% about you, if you want to just give a little bit of an introduction of yourself, I'd really appreciate it.
Sure. Well, I started off as a reporter in 1982 in Los Angeles, mostly writing for a weekly newspaper, LA Weekly, and things just expanded out from there through many different outlets. And medical stories, medical research, fraud, that was where I really cut my teeth, I guess you could say. But long around 1987, 1988, I began to feel that no press outlets really wanted to do a deep exploration of fake news as it was happening in major media, nor were they very interested in the question of who's really running the government, who's running the planet, big questions like that. So I began to kind of move away from all of this. And so when I became aware of the internet around 2000 and its power, I decided to start my website, which I did in 2001. And since then, I've really been away from the mainstream or even what was then alternative media, and just writing and publishing and investigating on my own. And that's what I've been doing all these years.
And you have written some tremendous books and articles, of course. In fact, folks, go to HagmanReport.com. There is a report by Mr. Rappaport, links back to his website, but the title of it is 10 Basic Forms of Fake News Used by Major Media. And of course, go to his bio page and his book page on Amazon. He's written some books, from Oklahoma City bombing to The Ownership of All Life, The Secret Behind Secret Societies, just to name a couple. So, prolific author as well. And thanks for offering that little background there. I think it puts things in perspective. And you've been around a long time, so you've seen a lot. What's on your heart? I know that we're going to talk about globalism versus populism. Where do you want to start, Mr. Rappaport? I kind of defer to you as the expert, because you've been around and you're the consummate professional. So I'm going to kind of let you direct our conversation here a little bit, because I think that would do our listeners and viewers a much better service. So where do you want to start?
Sure. Okay. Well, I would say that in my experience in talking to many reporters and editors over the years, one of the biggest forms of fake news that's around is what intelligence agencies call a limited hangout. That is when a scandal is threatening to erupt, usually involves crimes of some kind being committed by people that everybody knows about, politicians, maybe medical bureaucrats, people who are in the public light in some way or another. And so major media can't really ignore it completely or black it out or censor it or shut it down. So they do what's called a limited hangout, which means they write a piece or they broadcast a piece that sort of confesses to a mistake, an error. A partial acknowledgement of the truth is what a limited hangout really is.
Mm-hmm.
It buries the deeper crimes. It doesn't expose those. And the strategy is, well, if we give this a kind of a brush off, and we can even kind of trumpet it and say, you know, mistakes were made, a pharmaceutical company released a drug that injured many people, and so on and so forth. But we're not really going to get into the deeper aspect of the stories, which is, for example, by one study that I cite frequently, the medical system kills 225,000 people a year in the U.S. like clockwork. We're never going to touch that one. So we'll give it a partial airing. And then what we hope for is that if we just ignore the story after that, shut it down, pretend that it never really happened, people will be satisfied and they'll go away and they will forget about it too, and we can just move on to other things. And then if it's ever brought up again, we can say, well, we covered that. Don't you remember? We wrote a story about this, that, and the other thing and so on. That is one of the principal covert strategies of major media that people should be aware of. And you have to kind of get a feel for it. You have to read a lot of stories and look at it through that lens, and you begin to see, wow, yeah, this is what they're doing. They're giving us a piece of a story. They're giving us a little bit. It's kind of like a teaser or a trailer for a movie, but then there is no movie, you know. It's gone.
Right.
Never opens. And so I would start there and say, keep your eye out for that. And the other thing, which I would put up alongside that, is the strategy of creating what looks like a consensus. That is, stories that purport to say everybody knows, or the experts all agree on such and such and so. And that story does not just appear in one media outlet, say like the New York Times, but it enters what I and other people would call the echo chamber. The Washington Post follows up, the LA Times, CBS, NBC, the usual actors, they all pick up on the story. They all create this sense, for example, like they're doing now with the Russian hack of the election, that indeed it must be so because there is a consensus. And if you want to look for it, all you have to do is surf around and see how all the major media outlets are repeating the same story. When in fact, there really is no consensus. It's manufactured. Because the CIA has not really offered us any specific evidence that the Russians in some way attempted to influence the election in favor of Trump. There are counter stories from other people who say, for example, that the email account of John Podesta you know, a 10-year-old could have hacked into that. It was so easy to get in. There was no security, et cetera, et cetera. But these stories are shunted off to the side because they don't fit the consensus. And there are very knowledgeable people, for example, ex-CIA, that media outlets could bring on and interview, and those people would say that it's highly improbable that Russia did in fact hack the election or in any way attempt to influence it in the favor of Trump. But those people don't get a voice because the consensus that's fake has to be manufactured and sustained over a period of time to make what the media will hope is a majority of people believe the story. So the fake consensus is something that in my 30 plus years of reporting is something that I've seen done over and over and over again. Science and medicine are two major areas where you will get claims of this or that. For example, I wrote a number of stories immediately challenging the view that the Zika virus was really the cause of this birth defect called microcephaly, which was an echo chamber story in which every public health agency and doctors and other so-called experts manufactured a consensus that this was the case and that everybody agreed and there couldn't be any doubt and so on and so forth. And then, of course, now they've walked back the story, but that's consigned to page 16. It's right. Not in the same league, you know. So these are a couple of the big things that I would say people should watch out for in the news.
Okay. And so going back to your original statement, your reference to a limited hangout, I've covered this on our broadcast, earlier broadcast, because I think this is so important when we talk about a limited hangout, just to revisit this momentarily here. Of course, you know, once more, folks, it's a public relations or a propaganda technique, and I think everyone needs to understand this, that involves the release of just partial or even maybe previously hidden information in order to prevent a greater exposure to the more important details that are less obvious but significantly more important than what was released. And it's the deception and misdirection and cover up that's the key among the intelligence agencies. Now, having said that, as it applies to fake news, Mr. Rappaport, I was intrigued by, for example, the evolution, the establishment and evolution and of prop or not, that website of dubious, I'm not sure where that came from, but it received the imprimatur of the Washington Post, and only seemingly the Washington Post. To me, and I'll see if you agree, do you look at that website, for example, that lists the 200 or so, and it's always evolving, the names of those fake news sites, could that be, in your estimation, qualifies as a limited hangout?
Sure, absolutely. Okay. Because in that case, what we're seeing there is people have to understand the context. All major media were wrong about the election. They had gigantic amounts of egg on their face. Not only were they predicting that Hillary Clinton would win the election, but they were supporting her to the hilt. It was right out front. Anybody could see that. And then on election night, it was an absolute disaster for them. So they had to look around and find a limited hangout that would explain or cover over, in this case, their own sheer incompetence and failure to win the White House for Hillary Clinton. And so suddenly out of nowhere appears this extremely dubious website that you mentioned, and the Washington Post grabbing onto it with desperation to claim that somehow all of these fake news sites, by spreading disinformation, were the real source of Hillary Clinton losing the election. That was a cover-up, a limited hangout. It was several different things all at once. but it was an attempt to deflect attention and blame from themselves, because they were the ones that were really culpable in all of this. And so in that sense, it was surely a limited hangout.
Okay. And very well explained. Thank you for that. You know, it's interesting. And folks, go to HagmanReport.com and read the an absolutely incredibly well-written piece by John Rappaport, The 10 Basic Forms of Fake News, used by major media. And of course, we just talked about limited hangout, and then, of course, the consensus now. And it's interesting, too, and you've broken many stories about matters of health. In fact, in the spring of 2009, the WHO, talking about the swine flu, it was a level 6 pandemic, of course, and on and on and on. But it's amazing, too, that that technique, that consensus technique, it can also apply, too, if we kind of take a swing back to the Russian hacking allegations. Mr. Rappaport, I watched, and I got to ask you for your opinion on this. I watched the hearings with the DNI Clapper, his military aide, Mike, I can't remember his last name, and Lindsey Graham and others, and bringing forth all of this information about the Russian hacking. Sir, what is your take on this, and why are we seeing this, and what's the end game here that they're trying to do? I mean, is it war, or is it? I mean, I'm trying to understand this.
Yeah, it's a puzzle for sure. I think that this is yet another version of what we were just talking about. For one thing, we, the major media, have to find someone other than ourselves to blame for what happened in the election. We have to say that somehow the election was illegitimate, and therefore we, the major media, were not wrong. We had it right, and we would have been right except for the fact that this, you know, evil force, you know, interceded and swung the election away from the actual winner, which would have been Hillary Clinton, and handed the election to Donald Trump. And so we will focus on Russia, the evil empire, and we will claim that they were responsible for doing all of this. And of course, you can see that the story is extremely vague and fuzzy and blurry right from the beginning, because they started using this phrase, hack the election, hack the election. Another case of trying to build a consensus in this way by just using that phrase over and over again. And then you stop and you say, well, what does this really mean? I mean, are they saying that Russia actually manipulated the voting machines? Because that's what hack the election normally means. And then you investigate it. No, that's not really what they're saying. They're saying that Russia hacked the emails of Hillary Clinton, John Podesta, the Democratic National Committee, and then fed that information to WikiLeaks, who released it, and then that influenced the election in favor of Donald Trump. But even that story is absurd and insane, because it ignores the question of why would these leaked emails have swung the election away from Hillary Clinton? Because of the content in the emails that were leaked. But they don't want to talk about that. I mean, if these were harmless emails talking about brunch on Sunday and picnics in the park, no one would have cared. But they were devastating in their impact, talking about swinging the primaries away from Bernie Sanders and illegally moving them, you know, to Hillary Clinton and so on and so forth. Many things in these emails, the Clinton Foundation, corruption there and so on and so forth. So to me, on one level, this was the major media, again, picking out an enemy and inventing the enemy and targeting the enemy, in this case Putin and Russia, in order, again, to divert attention away from their own horrendous failure to win the election for Hillary Clinton or to even predict the outcome of the election. But further than that, I would say there is an attempt, and there has been an attempt underway, to try to create greater friction between Russia and the United States that could lead to a military confrontation of some kind and create a disaster of magnitude, which would then engage Trump as soon as he moves into the White House and make it impossible for him to try to initiate the reforms that he's planning, because he has to untangle this entire situation. And also to rally the troops, the Democratic liberal troops, to say, we now know that the election was completely illegitimate, and so therefore we have yet another reason to sustain our attack against Trump for the next 4 years, whatever happens, because we know that our girl Hillary should really have won the election, et cetera, et cetera. So all of those become motives here.
Certainly no lack of motives, to be sure. In your experience, your vast experience, and you're well respected, of course, among your peers and among the, you're extremely well respected. In fact, folks, Mr. Rappaport, he was a candidate for U.S. Congress, 29th District of California. He was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. He's worked as an investigative reporter, you know, for longer than many listeners have been alive. So you've seen a lot. Have you seen anything like what we're seeing play out now today in D.C. and just basically globally? I mean, it's got to be, it's crazy.
Never seen it before. Completely unique as far as I'm concerned in terms of the attack on an elected president before he even takes office, for one thing, and the attempt to overthrow the election. I mean, if you just want to focus on one thing, the attempts to threaten the electors of the Electoral College, not just influence, which would be bad enough, but actually threaten them to change their votes away from Trump to Clinton. Yeah. I mean, that's a federal crime of magnitude, and yet we have heard zero about any investigation at the federal level. And that's just one thing out of many that are happening here. I think what's going on here at the root is that, at least by his words, we will see what his actions are when he's inaugurated. But by everything that Trump said during the campaign, he was directly attacking globalism, exposing it as no presidential candidate has ever done, and at the same time running his campaign directly against major media by simply brushing them off as idiots and criminals and getting away with it. So here is a candidate who is nullifying the effect of the Ministry of Truth, right, major media, and at the same time saying about globalism that there are elites, people behind the scenes who have been manipulating this country for a very long time and torpedoing the economy as one of their major targets by sending jobs overseas, by allowing corporations to just pick up and go overseas and throw huge numbers of people out of work, and then exporting those products that they make with slave labor back into the U.S. and paying no tariffs whatsoever. He indicted all the trade treaties. He said he was going to cancel the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a major globalist treaty. Sure. That now people are saying is dead because of the election of Trump. This, I have never seen anything like that before. And the response to me is understandable when you realize the depth of his attack during the campaign against the Ministry of Truth, which is basically the voice of globalism, and two, the actual agenda of globalism, which is to reduce and destroy economies of advanced nations all over the world as a prelude to a grand planetary takeover, which I know is, it's a big claim, but I believe it's absolutely true.
Well, and yes, and you've spoken about this and through your many interviews, of course, and exactly. And on the other side of the break here, folks, we're coming up to the break here. On the other side, we'll be really hammering into with our final segment with Mr. Rappaport, globalism versus a populist movement, just kind of really hitting that hard, as well as the what's taking place, the widespread medical destruction of lives, very important to many of us, especially those of us who are, well, we're getting up there in age, and it's an important topic that's not covered. Only John Rappaport can cover it the way it needs to be covered, folks, really. You're listening to the Hagman and the Hagman Report. Our very special guest, Mr. John Rappaport. So lucky to have him. We really appreciate his gracious gift of time. And, of course, his website is nomorefakenews.com. Check it right out. Folks, we'll be right back. Stay right where you're at. Ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report, our very special guest, Mr. John Rappaport. You know him. Everyone knows him. He's a man that garners incredible respect. He's a man of integrity and character, in my view. He's the author of three explosive collections, The Matrix Revealed, Exit from the Matrix, and Power Outside the Matrix. And he's been nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. He's worked as an investigative reporter for 30 years, longer than that, writing articles on politics, medicine, and health for CBS Health Watch, LA Weekly, and I can go on and on and on. But you get the idea. He is the cream of the crop, in my view, when it comes to reporting and reporting the truth. That's most importantly. One thing I want to direct people's attention to is The Matrix Revealed. If you go to, and folks, just go to HagmanReport.com there, pull up the description for tonight, and you'll find a link to The Matrix Revealed. This is an amazing product that will educate you beyond your wildest expectations. It's 200 megabytes of information, over 1,100 pages of text. It's 10 and a half hours of audio. And Mr. Rappaport has included two bonuses, extraordinary bonuses. And you can read about it. Just go ahead and follow the links until you get to The Matrix Revealed. And what an incredible product it is if you want to know the truth. And we you know what? We need to know the truth. And one thing, too, I like about this, just real quick, is he gets into, he provides in this package his complete 18-lesson course about logic and analysis. And that is worth a lot. I mean, that's worth a lot, especially today when such logic and analysis is not being taught. And if you want to be, if you're aspiring to be a citizen journalist, this is it, man. I mean, so The Matrix Revealed. And that's a fantastic product. And I want to thank Mr. Rappaport for having that package put together. But let's get back to Mr. Rappaport here. We've got about, we only have about 26 minutes left or in the segment. So I just want to turn it over to you. Globalism versus populist movement and the widespread medical destruction of lives. I'm just going to turn it to you, and you tell us where we should focus our attention on over the next, during this segment.
Sure. Well, to me, what populism really means is that there is a large group of people, very large. It's a movement. And in this case, it's a movement about freedom. It's a movement that has to do with the way that the American Republic was founded, the documents, the Constitution, the idea of severely limited government, and therefore the greatest possible amount of individual freedom. That was the basis of all of those ideas, and it still is. And we can go back in time, and I'm just talking about recent time. A great many people focused around the campaign of Ross Perot. A great many people focused around the campaign of Ron Paul. And then a great many people focused around the campaign of Donald Trump. In every case, to me, the movement itself, which includes this program that we're talking on now, many independent media outlets all over the world, the movement is the most important thing. It's people who are waking up to the notion that our legacy and our civilization is being stolen right out from under us, and that the values on which that legacy is based, or are based, is and starts with individual freedom. And that globalism is the main actor in trying to destroy that tradition, that legacy, that present, that future. And it's headed up by people who have been operating for a very long time in every institution of society with the aim of putting the planet under one global management system, sometimes called a new economic order, the new world order. And I and others have pointed out in the past that one of the major groups behind this is the Rockefeller created Trilateral Commission, which was created in 1973. And if you think that that was an ancient organization, as author Patrick Wood has pointed out, there are 87 people who live in the United States who are members of this elite trilateral commission, and Barack Obama appointed 11 of them to key positions in his administration. Their idea, their whole force is no more sovereign nations, no more borders, no more nationalism, no more independence of the individual, but instead a completely engineered society from top to bottom, which pretends that there isn't enough to go around for everybody, especially in terms of energy, that people will eventually be assigned various energy quotas of consumption in order to limit their freedom and their mobility, that people and society and government will be handed over to technocrats who will create a machine, a global machine. And the populist movement has been waking up to various aspects of this by degrees for a long time. And with Trump's overt attack on globalism during his campaign, people are now realizing that they have been co-opted and taken over, and that freedom hangs in the balance. And this, I believe, this movement, which is backed and is explained and described and analyzed by independent media outlets all over the world, is now coming to be the most powerful movement in the world. Brexit was an example of that. England decided to exit from the European Union. The European Union is just one branch office of globalism. We are now seeing that possibly happening in France, maybe Italy. You saw the vicious attacks that were launched against people who wanted in England to exit from the European Union. You see vicious attacks launched against people who want to cancel a trade treaty like NAFTA or the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You see major media outlets trying to obscure all of this, but it is coming to the foreground, and it's about time.
It's interesting you classify or you mention the movement, because a lot of people focus on one individual, of course, Trump. When it's bigger than Donald Trump, it's bigger than any one person. It is this movement that, you know, that you talk about. What I find fascinating and equally disturbing are the people that, when you talk about, whether it be this fight against the globalism, or in any of its subcontext, or even the Brexit move, you see people who are mobilized. They've got signs. They're protesting, whether it's Brexit, Trump, or what Trump stands for. These aren't organic, spontaneous protests, in my view. They're organized by the people behind this. I don't want to sound so obvious, you know. However, I think it's important for people to understand, at least in my view, that the pushback that we are seeing is a real pushback, because I think we have the globalists on the ropes because of people like yourself who have been exposing this for so long, and hopefully programs like ours. So two formidable
forces. Absolutely agreed. Absolutely agreed. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, this is not just all of a sudden people congregate, you know, somewhere in a street corner or block traffic on a highway. This is well orchestrated, organized, and funded by people like George Soros, international financier, and others who are determined to forward the globalist agenda. Of course, they don't say that. They don't talk about it in those terms. But that's what they're doing. Chaos is their friend. They promote it at every opportunity because they recognize that there is an age-old formula that every tyrant has used since the dawn of time, and that is you engender chaos and destruction, and then you assume that people are going to react to that in fear and say, do whatever you have to. Just do whatever you have to stop this and give us back our security. We don't care about our freedom. Benjamin Franklin, I mean, if you want to go back, talked about this. It's not a secret by any means. Trading freedom for security, and you end up with neither. But that's the formula of the people who are sponsoring and funding the violence that we see. They want to create chaos. They want it to increase so that the crackdown on it becomes that much more credible and acceptable to people. They don't care who's doing it. Just make things safe again, and we will give up basically everything we've got for that. That's the formula, and it is definitely being orchestrated now. You will see it play out on the day of the inauguration. It's going to happen in some form or another. We don't know how extreme it's going to be, but it's going to be there for sure.
John, are you concerned about the, well, the, are you concerned at all about the safety of Donald Trump in the larger sense? I mean, I know there's always wackos out there, but I mean, from a globalist position, hey, we've got to get rid of this guy. Or is
I
that
am.
Okay? All right,
I am. I am, definitely. Mm. Anything could happen.
All right. And that's my point too. Yeah.
Yeah. What I wrote, I think maybe 6 months ago, maybe more, was the globalists, when they sensed that there was a good chance that Trump was going to win, contrary to what the rigged polls were showing and so forth, their attitude was, and generally is, look, we can make a deal. We'll make a deal with this man. We'll make many deals. We'll ask him what he wants. We'll tell him what we want. And we'll come to some kind of understanding here so that his presidency does not really detract from the onward march of our globalist agenda. That would be our first step. Mm-hmm. But if that doesn't work, if he really is the kind of maverick that he claims to be, and he really does cross serious swords with us, then we have to go to more extreme measures. So I don't rule out assassination by any stretch of the imagination. Anything could happen. He knows it. The people around him know it. They understand the stakes here. It just remains to be seen what kind of presidency we're going to see. And we have to look at that and see what he's actually going to do. But it's on the table, no question about it.
Okay. And that's a fair, yeah. I'm right there with you with respect to the future, and it does remain to be seen. You know, this is off the script. We have not spoken about this, but I want to ask you this because I've got a lot of respect for you. Your work, it speaks for itself. Again, you're an experienced investigative journalist, Pulitzer Prize nominee. I mean, you. And people can obviously go to your website, folks, it's linked off of HagmanReport.com, read your books as well. Of course, NoMoreFakeNews.com is your website. Read your books. The Matrix Revealed, I think, is one of the most comprehensive works in existence. But having said all of that, I want to ask you a personal question. Mr. Rappaport, given your experience, vast experience, and all the good that you have done for the so-called truth movement, and if I may, what are you most proud of? Because you've done so much good. What are you most proud of out of all of the years that you've been doing what you've been doing?
Well, nobody's ever asked me that question before.
I don't want to put you on a spot.
No, it's not. It's a good question. I would say when I see people waking up as a result of something that I've written and they let me know about it, that to me is very satisfying because that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm trying to do it in a way that actually empowers people as opposed to putting them into a state of depression. Because there's kind of a fine line there. You can pile up so much investigation and exposure of the bad things and the bad guys who are doing the bad things that people feel that there's nothing that can be done.
Sure.
And that was never my intention or my motive. So not only do I remind people about that, but I try to present what I'm exposing in a way that says, look, these guys, the bad guys, they are trying to paint a giant mural on a giant wall that they call reality. And they want you to stand there and look at it and accept it as the one and only reality. That's their job. That's what they do. If you see through that enough, and I'm trying to do everything I can to show you that that's what they're doing and it's a false picture they're painting, then you can flip and say, well, if that's what they're doing, then maybe I have the power to create a different reality, a better reality, something that is more long-lasting and liberating for myself, my family, and others around me. And if enough people do that, we have a transformation of society. And so that's the way I try to present everything that I do. And when people respond to that, then I know that it's clicking. That's where I'm coming from, and that's what I want to see happen. And when it does, I would say that's the thing that I'm most proud of.
Wow. And you are leaving, and have left. And I mean, if you decided just to play golf from now on, you know, I think your legacy, would be just that. And you know, I hear from so many people who are afraid. You know, I get emails almost on a daily basis. Oh my goodness, I've never been so afraid. You know, what can we do? It just seems so depressing. We can't do anything. But as Mr. Rappaport said, ladies and gentlemen, yes, we have that power. And it's marvelous that you point that out, that you have informed people to the extent where they can use that information as a weapon against the attempted subjugation of the populace. And you are to be commended. And it's not false flattery. It's just simple fact. Okay. Wow.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, you know what? And you deserve, I mean, you deserve the accolades, because I've been looking at your, and again, I've followed your work for some time, and I just appreciate everything you've done. Speaking of your work, and we have about 6 minutes left here. Do you want to get into a little bit about the medical destruction that's taking place, or do you want to go in a different direction? It's up to you.
No, that's fine. I'll try to capsulize it. This is, as I mentioned at the top, how I really got into reporting in depth in the 1980s. Not sure why it happened that way, but that's the way it played out. July 26, 2000, Journal of the American Medical Association, Dr. Barbara Starfield, a revered public health expert at Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. Everybody's credentials up and down the line were mainstream and meticulous, etc., etc., and she wrote a review called "Is U.S. Health Really the Best in the World?" and concluded, as I said before, that the U.S. medical system kills 225,000 people a year, like clockwork. That would be 2.25 million deaths per decade. Now, I have written about this. I interviewed Dr. Starfield in 2009, I believe it was, shortly before she died. I have found other studies and other authors who corroborate or go even beyond her conclusions. And this is all flying under the radar. And we are talking about, of course, medical drugs. We are talking about mistreatment and errors in hospitals. Those are the two primary sources. And we are talking about literally millions of people who are not directly killed by the medical system, but are maimed and disabled permanently, severely. All of this is taking place out of the view of the public, not covered or investigated by mainstream media. And I'm not even talking now about vaccine damage. That's a separate subject. So I have focused on this to a great extent over the last 25 years to alert the public to what is going on, in hopes that the movement that I spoke of a little bit earlier will expand to include this as well, that we have to take a completely different view of health, medical cartel, as I call it, what natural health really is, how people can put back together their own health. This is a gigantic subject, but I've just given you a brief kernel here at the root of it, because the destruction is felt by people everywhere, but it is not being reported on by so-called respected news outlets, and so the general public has not yet arisen in outrage at what is actually going on. I would add one more factoid to that. All of these medical drugs that are so destructive are certified as safe and effective by the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, which is one of the titanic rogue agencies that has existed within the federal government for a very long time. And no one at the federal level takes responsibility for any of this. They know what's happening. They are aware of the numbers that I just gave you. The FDA is aware of these numbers, et cetera, et cetera. And there has never been a significant investigation of any of this at the federal level. So it is a gigantic cover-up, and it needs to be exposed to the general public.
Indeed. Indeed it does. In the minute we have left here, where can people go to find out more about that of which you speak with respect to this topic?
The simplest thing they could do, aside from just going to nomorefakenews.com, is just go to a search engine, type in my name, type in Starfield, for example, S-T-A-R, Field, and they will find any number of articles that I've written about this. And we'll see the citations, the facts and figures, what's been happening, and they will understand. They could also type in my name and then follow that with psychiatry, and they would also be stunned to discover what's been going on in that cesspool for a very long time.
Man, I've read that.
So those were two easy things.
Yeah, and I've read what you've written about psych, and folks, that is, that'll keep you busy for more than a few hours. Mr. Rappaport, I just want to say thank you so very much. You know, I really, really appreciate your gift of time. And, I really think that, you talk about stellar. I'm proud to be able to say that, that I've been able to speak and interview you. And I think our audience is just, so much better for it. But please, hopefully you'll come back on again, and we can
anytime. And I want to thank you too for being extremely gracious. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I rank it right at the top of conversations that I've had on radio programs, and I really appreciate your taking the time to talk with me.
That means a lot, sir. God bless you. Thank you so very much, and we'll speak again. Folks, that was Mr. John Rappaport. All right. Mr. John Rappaport, his website, No More Fake News, you can learn a lot. And his books, and I'm going to tell you, his project, The Matrix Revealed, what a great assembly of information. Folks, we're going to be right back. Stay right where you're at.